What's going on, guys? Welcome to the show. Welcome back to another Wednesday afternoon and yet another episode of Action Movie Anatomy. We're here to break down Michael Bay's magnum opus. Is it his best film? I don't think so. 2007's Transformers is on the docket. Hang out with us, guys. We'll see you in just one second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom!
What's
up, everybody? Welcome to the show.
This is in the movie, right?
Yeah, this is in the movie. This is what Optimus shows up to.
He's like, drop the beat.
I am Optimus Prime.
Yeah, I don't think that happens.
That didn't happen in the film. It is a scorcher today.
I am
in Los Angeles.
Dying right now.
This is really hot. Welcome to the show, guys. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy here on the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies. All things movie related. Grab yourself a bucket full of pop culture and talk movies with us here on the show. We talk action movies on the show every single week for 100 weeks. And
105 now, right?
Yeah, and 11 million viewers and all the things that that you've come to know and love here. The movies we talk about on the show adhere to four basic rules. Rule number one, the hero always plays by their own rules.
He kind of ends up getting there.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure. Shia.
He needs to grow into him, so he's still maturing.
Yeah, right. He gets there a little bit. The hero and the villain are always the smartest people, beings, things, dinosaurs, aliens, robots, whatever in the room. Yeah, I mean, I guess so. It's like they're giant robots. So, like,
yeah.
Optimus and Megatron, I guess, are the
smartest. They traveled from, like, galaxies away to come here to find the cube, to restart. They know more than we know. I think that's clear.
Three, the movie is driven by a police, military, political, or mercenary figure.
It's so tough because, like, the military is what drives this whole movie. And in every Michael Bay movie, the military is, like, a true character.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, even though like, the military characters in this film basically don't need to
exist. They're so tertiary and don't need to be in the film.
And rule number four, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. Guys, it's a Michael Bay
movie. It's Michael Bay.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's, like, what he does. He's like, reshoot the explosion. Do it again.
We don't have enough money.
They're like, we got the shot already. He's like, just blow it up again.
Just do it.
Yeah, guys, that's what we do here on the show, Action Movie Anatomy. If you want to follow along with the conversation, you can find each one of us on Twitter or the podcast on Twitter at AMA Podcast.
You guys can find me at Andrew Guy.
Yeah, you guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter or Instagram as we talk about action films. And in the house today, we have our Sector 7 liaison sitting here on the couch. Welcome to the show, Marina Verano.
Hello.
Hey, welcome.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Ben and I have been fighting to get a third voice on the show for a while.
Yeah, we've had a lot of guests, and we've wanted to expand, be able to do some more fun things, and Marina works here with the same company, so she had interest in the show. She kind of approached us about, you know, talking about action movies, and we said, if you want to learn a thing or two about action movies, get stuff for you on the couch.
Yeah, we'll take you for a ride.
Learning from the best.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you. So you're here representing Sector 7, and we're gonna talk action movies here on the show today.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to say this real quick. If you guys are in the chat, Marina's gonna be in the chat. Feel free to say hi to her. You can say hi to her on Twitter as well. But she will be in there so that you guys can interact with us. So I don't have to be on my phone so damn much. And also, she's kind of a nice little voice for between you guys and us, because we're pros now. We're like professors. We need to, every now and then, we need to dial it back. We get a little too into our own zone.
Oh, yeah. We get convinced that everything we know is right.
Is right and brilliant. So we need something to kind of break that up a little bit. So welcome. We're glad
Thank
to have you.
You.
Yeah. Thank you for coming to the show today.
I'm excited.
If the folks want to follow along with you, where can they find you on social media?
Marina, MARINA _ Verano, VARANO. And that goes for Twitter and Instagram.
Cool.
Perfect.
Awesome. Well, thank you for womaning the chat.
And, there you go.
And yes, equal opportunity here.
Yes, right. We promote equal opportunity, and we're going to hop right. Oh, hey, Marissa, how's it going? In the booth as well.
Hello, gentlemen. The woman who's always been here.
The woman has been there since day one.
Yeah.
Our girl, Marissa Serafini.
The show would not happen without Marissa Serafini.
Marissa's too damn busy to just sit on the couch for us every single week.
Yeah. Marissa, you... we're doing Transformers 1. You with Anatomy of a Movie, you guys have covered at least a couple of these movies, right?
Yeah, a few. Just a few.
Are you a fan of the franchise?
I was a fan of the first one, and then I think all of them just, like, slowly degraded in quality afterwards. It became the more explosions, the less quality. So
I think they've all degraded in quality, including the first one, since the first one came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do agree that it's the best one.
If you watch it now, it's actually still pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
But if you follow it up with all the other ones, it doesn't make it great.
Yes, I stopped after the second movies when I stopped watching them. So, yes, we are going to get into this first film, though, which was definitely a cornerstone film at the time it came out, and a huge movie, a huge success, and something that I was very excited to watch when it came out, and I loved. I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a movie that I absolutely this movie. Adored. So, guys, coming up on the show today, we have a couple different things to talk about. We have your AMA questions to review later in the show. We have a segment we're doing called The Franchise Formula, talking about franchise movie making nowadays versus the last 35 years, and also something called The Icarus Effect. Yeah. What the hell is the Icarus Effect? We're going to find out together later in the show.
I'll tell you.
So right now we're going to hop right into the trailer. Let's see what this is all about. This is a good trailer.
It's a good trailer.
Yeah. So Bay knows trailers.
It's hot.
It's very warm.
Do it!
Nope, this is perfect. That's Shia LaBeouf
screaming
at you to do it.
That's a trailer for Shia LaBeouf being a golden god.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there when we get to star profiles. But that's just a little tease for you.
Just a little tease. That's amazing.
I wish Haggerty was watching this right now.
All right.
Cool. How's that chat going, Marina?
Good. It's going good. Shia is getting too close to the sun for the Icarus effect.
That's exactly it.
Or technical difficulties on the trailer a little bit?
Yeah.
Maybe. So, yes, guys, 2007 this movie first came out, and definitely I guess I recall watching this trailer, but when I looked it up the first time, it wasn't... Oh, here we go.
No.
Yeah, stop talking.
No, Dad! Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
You want it's up
yeah,
there.
I am.
I remember the song.
You're not getting a Porsche.
Yeah. Linkin Park, like, yeah. pulled Megan Fox aside after a concert.
It's like, put us in your movie.
Car. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cars, bitch, drive. It's a mystical bond between man and machine.
Did you get the original Bumblebee was next
yeah.
to him?
That's yeah. cool.
I didn't know that.
Crash my car!
This is like a modern day exciting trailer.
Yeah!
The amount of detail that they put into the actual transformation
what
is one of the coolest
to see
things. Yeah.
It's totally classified.
Dear God, what is this?
John Turturro, some of the creepiest
We're
lines in the history
attack!
Of movies.
Yeah, right?
She's a criminal. Criminals are hot. She's in high school.
We're facing
man.
War against a technological civilization far superior to our own. Our enemy can take any shape.
John
they
Boy,
could be
yeah,
anywhere.
Sound.
It's a robot. Yeah. You know, like a super advanced robot. It's probably Japanese.
Oh, is it Michael Bay?
No. Move!
Yes, good. It's a long trailer.
Yeah. This trailer's too long. It's a sweet trailer, but they're showing so much.
Yeah, they're showing.
All right, you shoot!
This might have been a later trailer.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
You have to get the car. Trust me.
That was practical. That was real.
What?
The bus.
Bring it!
Really?
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, I can't wait to talk about that. Sweet trailer. It's pretty
7:47.
Yeah, I still think that's like 30 seconds longer than it needs to be.
Yeah, definitely way longer than it should be.
But yeah, they definitely show a lot. It's cool looking. I can't decide if I had seen that in 2006. I don't remember watching that trailer. Honestly, I like watching it now. I don't recall seeing that trailer. I just
Henry
remember this
the
movie.
The Cube Boy. Yeah.
Sorry, someone just said that. And I wanted to say it. Yeah, I don't remember that trailer either. I don't think. I think that was after that. Kind of like the. I don't know. I guess that the Wonder Woman we put up. When we did Wonder Woman came out when the movie came out, I think.
That was like the big trailer.
Yeah,
and I guess that was probably the big Transformers trailer too. In any case, guys, so that was the trailer. We're going to get into the next section of our show, which is called Thesis Statement. This is that part of the show. You really share your bold thought here, that thing you stick to all throughout the show. It's kind of like if you have a conversation about this movie at a party and somebody's like, blah, 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 I watched Transformers last night. And you're like, you know the thing about Transformers
I wrote a book on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know the most important thing about that movie, and it's this. That's what your thesis statement is. It should be bold. It should be big. It should not be soft. My favorite this. It should be a fact, rooted in fact.
I like Rangers fan here who says that Steve Jablonski is the only awesome thing in this film, who was apprentice of Hans Zimmer.
Yes.
And that's, I honestly think the music is one of the best parts of this whole movie.
Jablonski's great. Also did the music in large part for the film Lone Survivor, one of my favorites, and a film we've done on the show before.
Absolutely. So do you want to hop in first?
Yeah, what I'm going to say is, and I think the trailer reminds me of it, when I watched this movie the first time, I thought there was 2 hours and 24 minutes of relevant movie. Watching this movie today, there is less than 45 minutes of a movie here.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree.
Yeah, I think there's 45 minutes or less of significant film in this movie. And that's not like it's a crazy revelation for most big budget action movies. I don't think that like we're like reinventing the wheel by saying that. But when you watch this movie, all the things that I remember on the rewatch, like back in 2008 when this came out on DVD and I bought it, DVD mind you, not Blu-ray.
DVD.
All of the things that I thought when I rewatched it, which was like, okay, the blonde hacker girl and like Anthony Anderson and these Marines and like all of the storyline, it's kind of long-winded and I'm not really sure why it's even here. And then watching it today, I was just like, wow, I forgot all of this was even in the movie. The only thing that I really remember, the only thing I care about is Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox and their relationship and the Transformers and really just the Autobots, because the Decepticons are fucking terrible.
Like, yeah, they're terrible, and they're like, they're such, they were so half-assed.
So compared to the Autobots, I mean? They didn't even try. They literally gave you like Megatron and like, I don't even think Starscream says anything. Does he ever talk?
He just goes at the very beginning in their different language. It's like subtitled. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They like, and then on top of that, all of the extra robot stuff they did is all like these like terrible three. You're like, what are you doing? Why is that thing like whether you can turn a Mountain Dew thing into a Transformer?
Look, that's one of my favorite parts.
What is this?
I think that's sweet. I don't really understand. It's so weird going back and watching this because I think I've seen all of them actually once at least. I thought that Josh Duhamel. There you go. Thanks, Marina. See, this is why we need her. her and then also the blonde girl's character storyline was in the second movie.
Can we get the name of the blonde girl's character, please? So we're not just being these like we got sexist pigs.
Yeah.
Rachel something maybe.
But yeah. You sure?
I think
you
maybe.
Better be right.
Yeah, Zoe. No. Zoe something. Zoe something. I think.
I remember that her and Shia like got caught drunk driving. Like in Europe later on.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, is Shy Daddy Megan Fox? And we got caught with her, of course.
Right, of course.
Such a stud.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what I was just saying in response to that.
Watching Duhamel, Josh Duhamel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just thought that their storylines were in the second film because they feel so out of place in this movie.
Yeah, right.
And like Marina was saying before we started, like, the movie opens on the soldiers.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's going to be about them, right? What were you saying about, like, the soldiers and the wife and, like, that storyline just felt like it was left behind, right?
Yeah, I mean, it starts off on this powerful note that Josh is about to have a baby born and he's missing the birth, can't be there for it. And you think, oh, my God, like, this is what the movie's going to kind of be focused on, and then it kind of gets taken away, and I felt like it was, like, a filler.
Yeah, it's so interesting because that is one of those things. It's like it's a button you push. When a soldier has a baby home that he wants to go see that touches an audience in a certain way.
Definitely.
And it is so weird for Michael Bay to be such a like a military-driven director to just put that in there and just gloss over it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And it's like this movie could have been like an hour and 50 minutes, and they could have gotten rid of quite a bit of the stuff in it, but I guess they just felt like they wanted to use all of these stars that they had paid and cast.
Totally. There's a lot of stars in this movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of big people.
Are there any good thesi that we're missing here?
Gerard Butler is a bad actor.
That's my favorite thesis. Go ahead.
This is as far as the Michael Bayishness can be pushed for it to still work. After this, every movie goes too far. This is right on the edge and it works.
Who said that?
That's our boy Richard
Jarvie.
Yeah, Richard, it's interesting you say that, man. I actually, one of the thesis statements that I was getting close to was that this is the peak of Michael Bay, and then everything from there is downhill. I don't even think this is peak Michael Bay, because I actually think that Michael Bay's 90s are much better.
Yeah.
This is the only good movie in the 2000s that he did, like good being a relative term, obviously. And the good parts in this movie are great. I still love
absolutely
the good parts in this movie. I'm still a big fan of. But yeah, he definitely pushes his Michael Bayisms to the max with this movie. And
while it's still works for the most part.
Well, he's like sort of the perfect director for Transformers in that way, with the way the Bayishness
and
works.
And it's interesting because that was basically Marissa's thesis as well, was saying that like after this film it just degrades.
Yeah.
And it's just because he goes more to his extremes. So guys, bear with me while I introduce my thesis statement, because it like means a lot to me. This thesis means a lot to me because it has this place in my heart from college where one of my best friends in college, my roommate, Jeremy Slater, he is just as big of a movie nut as you and I are.
Yeah.
Like, the guy will watch the same movie 5 times in one day, that type of thing. But the thing about Jared when he would watch movies is Jeremy has really bad ADHD. So he didn't care about the exposition for a movie he already knew about.
Yeah.
So we would always go to the part in the movie called The Island. And this term originated or derived from the movie The Island from Michael Bay.
The Island.
Because The Island is so bad, but it's so good.
Right.
And it's only bad because of the exposition and all the time they waste. If you go to like an hour in, you get to The Island.
Right.
Every great action popcorn blockbuster has that moment called The Island in it. And I think that Michael Bay, every single one of his movies has this moment, The Island, in them.
Well, The Rock, they physically get to an island.
Exactly. The Island, they physically leave the place that is called The Island.
Right.
And then in this movie, it's when all the Transformers or all the Autobots come down from space.
Right. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, this is what this movie's about.
You get the music, you get the feel, the tone, the lighting, the action. You get it. Everyone's there finally. You're like, oh, yeah. And that was the moment, too, when she was watching. She's like, what is happening? All these robots. And it's like, oh, these are the people they've been talking about for the last hour.
Right.
You know? So, like, I think that The Island alone is a new thing I'm going to start bringing up in every movie that we do because I forgot about it and I missed it so much. But I think that in Michael Bay's films are the best representation of what The Island actually is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so, because he uses a bunch of like really worthless stuff to set up for what is like his adventure. He has an adventure that he wants you to go on, and he feels it's necessary to spend 45 minutes. I mean, that's why we always say the worst part of The Rock is the car chase in San Francisco. It's unnecessary. Like, you have the intro with like you know, the dude with the two tranquilizer guns. And them robbing and stealing the gas.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you have, like, this whole, like, 25, 35-minute section of the movie that's, like, totally unnecessary because they get to the island and that's when the movie takes off.
Yeah, and it's the same. What was the movie we were talking about earlier? Was it just that? Was it The Rock? Or were we talking about another one, I thought, where it was, like, a great action scene in the beginning, but it wasn't The Rock because we love that movie too much.
Oh, in the film Taken.
Yeah, in Taken. It's like he kind of has that cool little moment of him being a, what does he call himself?
He's like a security advisor or something. He's a consultant.
I'm a preventer.
Yeah, preventer.
And you're like, okay, what does that mean? And then he prevents her from getting killed. You're like, okay, whatever. He can do something. But it's once he gets to France, movie trivia schmodown, that he realized that's the island.
Yeah, that's when it starts.
So anyway, that's my thesis. I know it's kind of weird, but it was mainly so I could just talk about this segment that I'm going to start bringing up. And you guys can't do anything about it because I'm just going to keep doing it. did you have a thesis, Marina?
I agree with Ben, because when I was watching the movie, I was like, okay, 2 hours and 24 minutes. If I were to walk in the room while the TV's playing this movie at an hour in, I would have been just as fine. And I know some people in the chat are saying their issue is that the movie is too long. That's their issue with Michael Bay movies, kind of dragged out when towards the end it's so straightforward. Why couldn't the whole movie be like that?
Sure.
And just kind of flow and connect. So yeah, I 100% agree with both of your thesis statements. I thought that was great.
Yeah, that it's funny because all three of them completely tied together.
Yeah, right.
With that. And then someone in here, where is this? They mentioned Armageddon.
Yeah.
Because Ben and I were talking about Armageddon on the way here, and he goes, so is the island in Armageddon when they get to the asteroid?
I think Armageddon, honestly, like the setup in Armageddon is like a little bit less problematic, but yeah, I think so, probably. A lot of it is kind of irrelevant, and it's like the movie starts out, and it's like stuff's blowing up, and like you kind of need to establish stuff on the oil rig, and then everything up to other than that you could have just like taken off into space.
I don't remember anything about that movie.
Well, and then also there's that whole weird, like, they see Peter Stormare on the Russian space station.
Oh yeah,
which is very unnecessary also. So yeah, maybe it is just intro and then just get to the asteroids, what you really want with that movie.
Right. Okay, so with the introduction of this, if you guys have, we've covered 104 or 5 movies now on the show.
Yeah.
At AMA Podcast or on the Facebook fan page, hashtag the island. Let us know what you think the islands are on some of your favorite movies that we've covered, and we'll debate. We'll maybe see. Maybe we'll agree. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, cool. Absolutely. I mean, yeah. Okay. Warrior, Sparta.
Oh, yeah, Warrior's definitely Sparta. Although, see, that's the one problem with the island in great movies.
Yeah.
Because the island, that's why I specifically said popcorn blockbusters, is because if you skip to the island in Warrior, you miss him talking to Nick Nolte in the beginning.
Yeah.
You miss Brennan in the fight, and you miss him knock out Mad Dog for the first time.
Yeah, I don't think that like every movie has
the island. But I totally agree with what
you're
saying.
I mean, I think we're talking about basic screenplay structure here. We're just talking about Act 1 is usually irrelevant, mm-hmm. and Act 2 is really exciting, and only good movies have a good Act 3.
Don't dumb it down, man.
Yeah. all right, so guys, we are going to move on to the next part of the show, and this is Fist Pump Moment. It's that moment where you're watching a movie, something happens, you look around, you're like, are you seeing this right now? This is so awesome! I get to watch the rest of this movie! This is nuts! You get so pumped up, you want to call your buddy, you want to be like, oh, you know, go to 17 minutes and 22 seconds.
You're at a funeral?
I don't care. You turn it on. And that's what Fist Pump Moment is. It can be anything. It can be the credits music. It can be a look from one character to another, an explosion, a one-liner, whatever. I know what my Fist Pump Moment is, clearly. Yeah. And it's been the same one since the first time I saw it, and this has a very special place in my heart. So,
Do you want to go last then?
Yeah,
or
sure.
Do you want to go first? Because I'm so curious.
Yeah, I can go last.
I want you to go second. I want you to go first, Marina. Do you have a fist pump in the movie? A moment in the movie that made you do that?
Okay, it might stray away from your fist pump moment, but I'm gonna still say what
it
was.
Wait, I gotta interject. Anything can be a fist pump moment.
Anything.
Anything.
Then anything goes. It was more like an awe moment, okay. If you want to take it that type of approach. I don't know if anyone else in the chat or watching agrees, but when Megan Fox says to Shia and was like, you know what, I'm really glad I got in the car. It's kind of like that, you know, like, let's all take it back. We're watching a movie. These are real people, real emotions. Mm-hmm. Kind of takes you away from all the explosions, you know, all the fighting, and you're like, wow, aw. You know,
right.
That was my, like, you know what, I like this relationship. All for it. Let's carry out the movie.
Right, because she doesn't even kiss him. She just says it.
Right.
She just says that one line, and then he goes off to risk his life.
I'm the type of... I love that thesis, because I'm the type of person where, like, if I get a speeding ticket,
yeah,
I'm like, if I would have just woke up 5 minutes later, if I would have had an extra cup of coffee, if I would have done this, I wouldn't have gotten the ticket. Or if I would have done all these things, maybe this would have happened. So what I love about that line is, I'm really happy I got in the car, is it makes you remember how this whole thing started.
Right.
It was him and his shitty Camaro pulling up at a lake party, getting made fun of, and then leaving.
Miles climbing the tree.
Yeah, and Miles climbing the tree is one of my favorite moments ever, because everyone had that weird friend in high school. But yeah, I love that. That's a great fist pump moment.
Yeah.
You were just saying how Totoro is like one of the funniest.
Oh, yeah.
Someone goes, he is my fist pump moment.
Yeah, Totoro's like such a weirdo. He has that one line. I just think every time I watch the movie, when he's like, she's a criminal. Criminals are hot. And you're like, she's in high school, man. You're so weird.
Yeah, it's so creepy.
Yeah.
So good.
Just him. He is the fist pump.
Yeah,
he's a walking
fist pump. That definitely happens. We're going to cover Rise tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, not tomorrow. Next week on the show. And I think it wasn't my actual fist bump, but when Brian Cox walks on the screen for the first time, I was like, I can't use it. Yeah.
Just that Cox, man. I had that moment.
I almost wanted to call you.
Yeah.
All right. So, fist pump moment for me, it goes back to me being a kid.
Yeah.
When this movie came out, it was 10 years ago. I was, you know, I was, Jesus, how was I, 19?
Yeah.
I'm old. But I was still like a kid in my mind, and I loved Transformers growing up. I didn't remember it as fondly as you did, but I loved them.
Yeah,
I just didn't follow it as closely, I don't think.
Right.
But I was waiting the whole movie for Optimus.
Yeah, of course.
Everyone's waiting for Optimus, you know, but Bumblebee's there, and you love Bumblebee. Everyone falls in love with Bumblebee.
Yep.
But it's that moment when all the bots come down from space, all the Autobots come down, and they start to, like, the Pontiac Solstice and the Hummer. And and da-da-da-da-da, and you're like, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? And then you see the sole empty highway with this fucking badass semi-truck driving on it.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's it.
That's
and then
Prime.
You see it, and then Prime. And that was the moment. And then he comes up, and within 2 minutes, he transforms.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's like...
I remember thinking it was interesting that they chose to not give him the carriage, you know what I mean? Like, in the...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense, obviously, because in the cartoon, like, the carriage, like, largely just disappears when he transforms.
Right.
Just kind of, like, doesn't exist anymore. But totally.
How'd you feel about Megatron not being a Walther P-38?
Why not being a gun?
Yeah.
I think it's sweet. It's much more menacing. I mean, the fact that Megatron transformed into a gun that Starscream would shoot was always kind of like...
That's exactly what they said, is like, it feels like Darth Vader transforming into a lightsaber than someone else wields. And it's like, why would you do that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I still think the handling of the Decepticons in this movie is just kind of
shitty.
Bad.
Megatron's
fine.
I love Hugo
yeah.
as Megatron, but everything else is really poor. Like, make that little ninja thing running around the whole movie.
Yeah.
Like, evil.
Totally.
Because he's got those sweet blades. He destroys people.
I know, I know. And they make him like a... that's the problem. They make this very, very kid-friendly because it's a kid's franchise. Originally, that's toys.
I love it. Joel Hammett. The entire Bernie Mac scene was a good fist pump for me.
Oh, that my God.
He's really sweet.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
it's really racist.
R.I.P. Bernie Mac. He's like so... his humor is so racist. And then like it turned out that he just was a giant, actually like kind of a bigot. Like...
yeah,
his,
that's
like,
true.
He got in a
happened.
Lot of trouble for his comedy. Or at least his comedy bit made him seem like one. I did not know the guy personally, and I don't mean to speak ill of the dead. So, you know, no ill will towards Bernie Mac.
It was
Mac,
just one of those things. Look, we'll just address it now. We'll try to leave it in the wayside because we do enjoy Michael Bay as a director for the most part. The dude has a problem with racism in his films. And
his
just,
black characters are like, just like,
it's just
come
like, come
on,
brother. Like, you're a, get, just hire a black writer then. Or hire just like not you to write this. Anyone. Even though he didn't write those. It's like, I know that Kurtzman and Orci didn't write that because they don't write that way in their other films.
Yeah, right. It's, a, it's totally.
It's a total Bayism.
Yep, 100%.
But moving on past that, I want to say this. Bateman, you're going to be a guest on Eddie's show on Friday.
Yeah, on Bigger Boat Movies. I'm gonna do a call in interview. Cool. Eddie requested. Yeah, it was really cool of him to ask me to come on. So,
do you have any idea what time? Or do you not really know?
No, I mean it's Anchor, so it's gonna be.
Oh, it's just up.
Yeah, right. Well, it'll live for 24 hours. You know, you guys should download the app Anchor.fm. My station that I was doing on movies is inactive at this moment, but I do still have the Magic the Gathering station that I've been doing, and you know, I do guest on other people's stations. So, Eddie, I'm more than happy to do that. I'm looking forward to that. So, where were we?
Moving on to star profiles.
No, my fist bump moment.
And I don't really care about that. I totally forgot. Yeah, what is it? I want to know.
I'm excited. So
I thought it was, that's why I wanted to say mine first, is because I thought mine might be yours.
No. Yeah. My fist bump moment is when you know, they're like Megan Fox is staring up at Bumblebee, and she has the one line. She's like, "Why are you here?" Or whatever. And then he starts playing.
Why are you here?
Yeah. And he starts playing the music and all the little like the clips.
Yeah.
And they keep asking questions. It's like a different clip. And then she says the one line or whatever, and he transforms down into the car, and they start playing the theme music.
Yeah.
And it plays the John Wayne clip where he's like, "Any more questions you want to ask?"
Yeah.
And then they hop in the car, and the reason I've always loved this so much is a lot of you guys don't know this, but I moved out to Los Angeles in 2009 to be a musician originally. I had an album out and a second one in the can. I was touring, and I've written a lot of songs, and so there's a song from this movie called Before It's Too Late by the Goo Goo Dolls. It's a really good song.
Oh, yeah.
It was the last hit, really, that they had as a song. They had one more after that, but it was sort of the last, like, really big song they had, and it took off. And I heard it, and I love that song. And that's the song that is Sam Michaela's theme. That's the song that plays when they get in the car. And I've just always loved the song. I was a big fan at the time. They, like, influenced my writing as a songwriter a lot. And I've just always loved that moment. It's exciting. It's a great song. It illustrates the scene perfectly. And, like I said, it's the... when they're in the car too, and you know he says the thing, but she's like, it's a pretty smooth move, you know, with the whole seatbelt thing, you know, he's like, "You should get on my lap," all that stuff. I just love their relationship. That's my favorite part of this whole movie, and I think that their high school relationship feels very believable.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the best things about this movie is their relationship together. We've all been that kid to that girl. I don't know about you, Marina. Maybe you were that girl, but there had to have been like that hotter older guy or something like that. Yeah, I know, dude. I'm dying. In high school, I remember my best friend growing up, his name was Kevin Shintaku, and he had a sister who was like 3 years older than us.
Yeah, right.
She was like really popular and gorgeous, and her and all of her friends would always hang out there. And it was just like the unattainable beauties. It was literally, I was literally Shia LaBeouf with my friend Kevin, who was climbing a tree. Yeah.
Are you sure we're invited to this party? It's at a pool. It's at a lake, Miles. Everybody's invited.
It's public property. Like, all right, let's go.
I like how it moves slow, too.
Yeah.
Like you said, like, he didn't even kiss her. It was just like...
yeah, right.
These phrases, and you were like, okay. Like, you know what I mean? It kept you intrigued, because if it, you know, if in the first hour they were like this power team, you'd be like, okay, cool, gave it away.
It was like high school. Like, you slow played it. You played it, you know, kind of cool. You were nervous.
And Shia is so good in this movie. He's such a movie star. He's so, like... when she's like changing his hood and he says, she's like, "The one thing about screwing hoods," and he like pokes his head past the hood for a second. He's like, "Oh my God." Like, it's just like, he's just got it.
Like pulling, because we talk about this thing on our show a lot. It's something called movie star charisma. And there's a lot of great, great actors out there that just don't have it. They don't have that thing to be the leading man, to have the leading.
Yeah.
And Shia's one of those guys that really has it. And the way you can tell is by him doing weird cliche things like leaning over the hood and doing that face, or like, "I got the new disco ball, I'm back here in the disco ball, so light off the disco ball," and you're like, this is so stupid, but it's hilarious.
Yeah, right.
And only, like, yeah, he pulls it off brilliantly.
When
I love it.
Yeah, when he's talking to Trent or whatever at the lake, and he's like, I'm actually writing a book about the correlation between brain damage and football.
So you think you're funny?
Yeah.
I like that part.
It's a great line. So let's talk about Shia. Let's move on to our star profiles. This is a really interesting guy because, as you guys know that watch this show, Ben and I adore Shia LaBeouf for some odd reason.
yeah, big time.
And it might be the video. We don't even need to show it anymore, Marissa. It's fine because we got the clip in the beginning.
We should just do it.
Like, if you guys have time, go and watch the Just Do It video because it is absolute. Actually, you know what? Screw it. Can we just play like 20 seconds of it?
This was like one of those things that happens where everybody's like, what?
You lost your shit.
Who thought of this? So yeah. He's like, just stand in front of a green screen.
Yeah.
What is it?
Do it! Just do it! Don't let your dreams be dreams. Yesterday, you said tomorrow. So just do it! Make your dreams come true! Just do it!
Do it!
People dream of success while you're gonna wake up and work hard at it. Nothing is impossible!
We gotta see the hand thing and then we can cut it.
You should get to the point where anyone else would quit. And you're not gonna stop there!
Cause you're gonna...
No! What are you waiting for? Do it! Just do it! Yes, you can! Just do it!
Okay. All right. All right. I'm gonna fucking die. Thank you, Marissa.
Thank you, Shia.
Shia LaBeouf. So, all right, let's talk. Everybody watched Even Stevens, and he was in Holes, right? Holes is 2003, I think is what we established the other day. And but this movie comes out in 2007, you know, or 2007. It's the same year as Disturbia.
Wow. Like, six people just mentioned Disturbia all at the same time.
Oh, weird.
They loved it.
Yeah, Disturbia was a movie, you know, because all
That's
of a sudden...
David Morse in it.
Yep.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Shia LaBeouf had turned into this, like... He had turned into this, like, young adult. He was no longer, like, a little kid who was cute. Girls thought he was hot. He was, like, a young adult.
Yeah, because he got like, pretty jacked for this movie. And in filming, he was like, I realized I needed more agile than strong.
Yeah.
But it was after the film, you're like, damn, dude, Shia's, like...
Yeah.
Well, I didn't do that.
Yeah, he, like, you know, he, like, looks like a grown-up. And, it's just around this time I just remember all of my friends like had like the biggest crushes on Shia LaBeouf. So Disturbia was the much like lower profile movie.
And Shia LaBeouf had been like girls had crushes on him since before girls even knew what crushes really were because of Holes.
And Even Stevens.
Like, I just like that guy. And yeah, and Even Stevens. And it was like I'd just been competing with him my whole life.
But... And I think we should probably cover both of their careers quickly before we get into our next segment.
For sure.
Where on the other end of things, Megan Fox completely came out of nowhere. You know, she's got a role in Bad Boys 2, Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen. I do remember people watching that movie, but I do think that movie blew up a little bit more after this came out.
Yeah.
Because she had been in it. And people don't remember now because Megan Fox has faded off. But when this came out, Megan Fox was Kate Upton, but a movie star.
Megan Fox was like the biggest thing in the entire world. I don't even know how to explain
what
it.
I mean
like
is
more than Kate Upton.
In the sense that Kate Upton was on the cover of every magazine. She was featured on every telecast. She was dating pro athletes.
She was on those and in movies.
Yes.
You're saying, yeah.
She was the thing. She was like the thing. Everybody was just like, oh my God, Megan Fox, the hottest thing I've ever seen. Who is this chick?
Yeah.
She completely came out of nowhere. And the crazy part is...
You know about the wash my car thing, right?
Oh, she washed Michael Bay's car in
like
an audition, right?
He had a bunch of people, girls, wash his cars, and that was how he cast her, was that she washed his car the hottest. I hate Michael Bay.
Yeah.
I hate him.
Yeah.
I love him and I hate him. Anyway,
so
keep going.
Gross.
Yeah.
So gross. And I mean, it's like you understand what he's going for with that move. Like, you get it.
Oh, of course. And honestly, I mean, like, as much as I want to fault him...
It worked for him.
It worked for him, and it worked for the movie.
Yeah.
Megan Fox in this movie is... incredibly hot.
Yeah.
Like, not even, like, beautiful. She's just hot.
Yeah, right.
And he figured out how to, like, embody hot
in
high school without making it too creepy.
Yeah,
you
it
know
wasn't
what I
creepy.
Mean?
Yeah, she's not creepy. She doesn't seem slutty. Mm-hmm. She's, like, she's just really hot. She looks like the unattainable, smoking hot girl next door in high school.
Yeah.
He, like, captured that. Which
perfectly.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the things that makes this movie so satisfying because Shia LaBeouf is, like... the really confident but like total nerdy guy who's and she's like way out of his league and that's what makes the movie work. So talking about the Icarus effect, stars that kind of burned a little too bright, got a little too close to the sun in their primes and really fell off a cliff, and some come back. I think Shia's coming back.
I hope Shia comes back.
He's definitely in it. I think so. I mean, like Fury, a couple of these other movies. He's getting bigger parts again.
He was good in Fury. He was fine in Fury.
He didn't totally fall off a cliff, but there's a movie called A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints that I'm a big fan of. That is a...
I keep hearing about that movie.
It's a really well-acted movie from around the same time. Channing Tatum's big break. He was a very credible actor that people thought was going to be really good. He was in that movie Eagle Eye, which I think was the next year. I think Eagle Eye is 2008. The second Transformers... And it was around the time of the second Transformers that his name was all over the tabloids.
Yeah.
And then it's the next year that all that weird stuff starts with, like...
Yeah, with
wearing the bag on his head and the plagiarism,
like,
stuff.
And then he went and watched all of his movies in a row in a theater and was, like, crying. He, like, videotaped himself, watched every movie he was in a theater, which I actually think was, like, kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's a cool thing.
Yeah.
Like, to go in, like, if you were actually to rent out a theater and watch every movie you were ever in, like, it's kind of weird and self-indulgent, but at the same time, like, it'd be a really cool moment for yourself to go back and look at your life.
Well, super reflective.
Yeah. But for us, it looks like someone just, like, jerking themselves off.
Well, let's be honest. It's a really cool moment to do for yourself. Filming yourself doing it is the douchiest thing of all time.
Totally fair.
That's
fair,
the douchiest thing that I've ever heard of in my life, which is why people think it was the worst move.
Yeah.
He just did a lot of weird shit. And
people were just got tired of him. And it wasn't even because he was bad.
No. And it didn't end for him. He's still enigmatic to people, and I think he's still a great actor, and I think the right people, you know, a lot of directors that are in their 50s and 60s don't pay any attention to any of that stuff. They stay off social media. They just know him as a good actor, and they're going to put him in their movie.
I'll be honest. In the most recent Atomic Blonde trailer I saw, I thought McAvoy was him for a minute.
Oh, yeah.
When he comes by with the shoe, and she shoots, awesome. And he's like, I got your shoe.
Yeah.
I thought it was him, and I would got so excited for a second. It wasn't.
I think he'll continue to be a star. Megan Fox, on the other hand, completely fell off.
Right, because she did this, and then she did Jennifer's Body, and she got fired from the Transformers franchise because she referred to Michael Bay as a Nazi.
Yeah.
You can't refer to Michael Bay as a Nazi when Steven Spielberg is producing your freaking movie, girl. What are you doing?
Yes.
He made Schindler's List.
Yeah.
He made Saving Private Ryan. He's Jewish.
Like, yeah.
Just so stupid. And that's another reason that I wanted to talk about is because, like, no matter how beautiful you are, you need to still be talented. And even if you're beautiful and talented, which I didn't think Megan Fox was that talented, but I didn't think she was untalented.
She's good enough in this.
Yeah.
Good enough.
You got to keep your shit together.
Yep.
You can't be rude. And that's why I wanted to talk about this segment, because there's so many different reasons that this happens to people. And Katherine Heigl is one of the ones that pops in my head more than anyone.
Yeah.
So Katherine Heigl was on top of the world when she made Knocked Up.
Yep.
Judd Apatow and his boys were on their way up.
Yeah.
Knocked Out comes out. Katherine Heigl's a nightmare on set. She talks shit about everyone involved. She hates Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
Publicly speaks about how bad of an actor he is and how bad he is on set.
Yep.
And then what happens over the next 2 years? Those boys become the biggest people in the world, and you're not in movies anymore.
Yeah, I know. And all the movies she filmed during that time came out. They did okay. Mm-hmm. Some of them were kind of flops. What, 27 Dresses and The Ugly Truth?
Yep.
And she just stopped being a movie star. And now she was in the TV version of, what, Doubt? And then it got canceled?
Yeah.
I mean... Look, you can never know why people's careers do or don't work out, because we've seen tremendously talented people fall off, and we've seen people that have no talent seemingly work forever.
Yeah, like one of the best examples today that I think is shocking that neither of them have burned out yet are Jai Courtney and Jason Clarke.
Yeah.
They're like the same filler characters in everything they do, but they're good enough.
Yeah. People seem to like them enough.
Yeah.
And maybe they're nice guys, so they're easy to work with.
You had an interesting one talking about... Mickey Rourke and Eric Roberts.
Yeah, Mickey Rourke and Eric Roberts, man. Early 80s, those guys were on top of the world. Those guys were the guys. I mean, people don't know this about Mickey Rourke. Younger people don't, if they haven't done the research. But
I like Lawless, too, by the way. People are saying that.
Mickey Rourke in the early 80s was a legitimate heartthrob. He was like the hottest guy in the world.
Totally.
From like 81 to like 86, 87, he defined like sexy. He was in 9 1/2 Weeks, and he was in The Pope of Greenwich Village, and he shows up in Diner for the first time, and he's such a stud in Diner.
Yeah, I it's so funny, because like my sisters and my mom, I mean, my sisters are much older than I am, but they grew up in that time when he was like the dude. And when I talked about Mickey Rourke with Wrestler, they were like, Mickey Rourke is back?
Yeah.
I was like, what do you mean? I didn't really know about his life before.
The big story with Mickey Rourke, the crazy part about him, and Eric Roberts too. Eric Roberts is a more complicated one, because Eric Roberts had a whole, he is Julia Roberts' sister, and there was a whole feud between the two of them where basically she got super famous and blacklisted Eric Roberts. Because he's in a bunch of those movies in the 80s. He's in Runaway Train, and he's in Star 80, and he's in The Pope of Greenwich Village, and then he just disappears for the whole entire 90s and most of the 2000s as like a TV actor. Rourke is a little different, because Rourke got way more famous. Angel Heart, 9 1/2 Weeks, and all these movies. And then it's the late 80s. He got like a six-picture deal, picked a bunch of bad projects, was a nightmare to work with. Yeah. And then people wouldn't cast him anymore. And then I think he got into boxing and his face got really beaten up. And that's where in the 90s he turned into this like bright orange, super tan, shredded guy who like was kind of like just – and he came back to the wrestler. That was the big
– Did he get in a wreck too or something?
Might have crashed a motorcycle, but that one I don't know. I know that he was boxing.
It was like the boxing messed his face up, and then the plastic surgery to fix it is what made him look the way he does now.
I think so. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. He's a sad story.
The wrestler's so good, and the cool thing is like to see these people come back. You know, like I think the resurgence of Michael Keaton is one of the greatest things that's happened in the last few years of film.
Huge fan.
And he burned out for almost no reason.
I mean,
you know?
Travolta's another one.
Sam, I'm almost annoyed that Rangers fans said this before I got to get there.
Yeah.
But because Sam Worthington is the person I mentioned first always in this.
We pretty much wouldn't have an episode of Action Movie Anatomy if Andrew didn't find a way to denigrate Sam Worthington.
Look, again, like I don't dislike Sam Worthington, but the guy, he is the definition of the Icarus effect, you know?
Yeah, he is. He is. Yeah. I think, yeah, Worthington, I think
I hate you, Sam. No, I mean, sorry.
I think that, honestly, John Travolta is maybe the most famous example of all time because Travolta...
Well, I still love the story that you tell about him in Saturday Night Fever. I just want you to tell it again.
Yeah, so Saturday Night Fever and Grease, you know, in the late 70s, he becomes arguably the biggest star in the entire world in the late 70s. His rise from television to not only was he the sexiest man in the world, but he also could dance. So, like, the world thought he was an absolute stud, a star.
He was a model, dancer, actor, sex icon.
Yeah. 81, he does Blowout, the Brian De Palma movie, and then he just disappears for the 80s. Like, the whole 80s, he makes not a good movie. Mm-hmm. Nobody sees him in anything. He doesn't come back until Pulp Fiction. And when we did The Punisher on the show, I was going back and watching old press junket interviews for The Punisher when he plays Howard Saint. And the guy's asking
Howard
him,
Saint.
He's like, so tell me a little bit about, you know, making Pulp Fiction, when you know, why you were willing to accept that role in a film that you weren't starring in at that point. And he's like, well, you see, when I made Saturday Night Fever, that film changed the world, you see. And at the time, you know, it changed the world. When Pulp Fiction came around, I was established enough in my career, I was willing to be in a film where the film would change the world, not just my character in the film.
God.
You see. And he says that over and over again. And you're watching, you're like, God, you're a real person.
Look, I hate you.
Yeah. Just like, oh, God, change the world. Who are you?
It changed the world. I think what I really love is just your impersonation of Travolta when he says that is my favorite thing.
Big shout out to whoever in the Facebook fan page. We have a Facebook fan page, by the way. A couple of you guys who are in the chat watching and listening created a Facebook fan page recently that has, like, the longest threads of movie discussion I've ever seen. And somebody posted a face mash of Tom Cruise and John Travolta.
I can't stop looking at it.
Tom Travolta, and it's frightening.
It's Lee Hansen. Brilliant, yeah. And also, just a shout out to everyone in the chat. We got like 40 people in here watching the new, or in here watching us talk about the old Transformers, which is great. I want to mention two more people, and I want to move on because we're getting stuck on this. Robert Downey Jr. and Charlie Sheen.
Oh yeah,
huge ones. Love those because Charlie is the definition of someone that burnt out, and then we don't want him back because he had 2.5 Men, and then he did Anger Management. What was it called?
You
know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, for sure. I can't think of what that movie was called.
No, the TV show. There was like a TV show that he did after
Anger Management.
Yeah, 2.5 Men got canceled. But then Robert Downey Jr., it was like the drugs and all that happened after U.S. Marshals.
RDJ, no, actually, I think U.S. Marshals is the...
Was that Hookers?
I thought U.S. Marshals was around the time that he started to repair his career. I guess that's 98, though, so maybe...
20 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I think RDJ is the all-time example of a comeback because he's more significantly more famous in the second half of his career now than he ever was in the first half. And he was nominated for Best Actor for Chaplin in 1991.
Yeah, and then he got nominated for Best Supporting Actor in Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
So he truly is...
One of the best roles ever.
One of the greatest of all time. All right, guys, we are going to take a quick break to go take an ice bath. And
yeah, right? I'm dying. So let's move on here to production development. We talked about Roberto Orci and Alex Kurtzman last week.
Yeah, it's a writing team. It's a writing and production team that worked under J.J. Abrams largely in the early parts of their career, working on shows like Alias and Lost. They wrote this film. This film was very successful. They ended up working on Mission Impossible 3, Star Trek, The Amazing Spider-Man, and several others. Kurtzman just directed The Mummy, which is a shame for him, and he's also working as an advising producer on Star Trek Generations, or not Generations, the new one.
Star Trek Beyond?
Yeah, no, the new show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The one starring Tavington.
Damn him.
Yeah. So that's Kurtzman. Roberto Orci was supposed to for a while, or he was anyway, he was rumored to direct Venom. I don't think he is attached anymore. That was Kurtzman. He was supposed to direct Star Trek Beyond is what.
Yeah.
And he didn't end up directing it. Mm-hmm. So that was Justin Lin in the end. But yeah, they're like a couple power guys. They don't work together anymore, but the split was amicable.
They've had incredible success and made a lot of money. They just don't. Really, I mean, they make some great films, and they make some mediocre films. It's tough being a writer. You know?
Michael Bay comes from the world of music videos originally.
You can tell watching this movie.
Yeah, his first feature film is Bad Boys in 95. He's done everything from The Rock to Armageddon, Pearl Harbor, The Island, Pain and Gain, 5 Transformers movies, 13 Hours. He keeps working. He is, you know, for better or for worse, one of the most clearly defined creators of all time.
Yeah.
He's a huge producer. He's produced, you know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles films, all kinds of stuff. So he's well known. He's Michael Bay. He's one of the biggest names in the whole world.
And I think it's a really interesting thing to talk about here. Our buddy, I was going to say boy and buddy.
So you combine them.
Boydy. Our buddy Sean Smith on the Facebook page. You guys can follow the Facebook page as well as our Twitter. We pull our questions from either of them. So Sean Smith on our Facebook page with his hashtag AMA question of the week ties directly to this. I think it's a really brilliant question. He says, in the hands of a different director, does Transformers have the potential to be a legitimately good movie? Or does the source material prevent it from being anything more than a loud and silly blockbuster action? And to add to that, I believe it was Richard who asked if you think we should just do an animated feature instead.
Well, so the Transformers animated film from 1986 is one of my 50 favorite movies of all time.
Right. So do you think they could do that again now and it would be excellent, like with the way they did the Jungle Book and Beauty and the Beast?
It's hard to say because I really do think that in a lot of ways that, you know, they tried to market this film half to adults who had watched this movie as a kid,
mm-hmm.
and half to kids. And that's, you know, like the animated movie was made for children and it's just happened to be something that I loved and feel very fondly about now. If you try to make it for kids now, I just don't think it's that easy.
I don't think you can really make anything for kids specifically now with this type of subject matter.
No.
You know, like Spider-Man 2, I mean, Spider-Man Homecoming is not for kids.
No.
It's for teens and young adults and well, everyone really now. So the other part of the question that Sean asked, in the hands of a different director, do you think this would be more or less successful?
Successful, better. I mean,
let me get the actual words. Potentially,
you know,
be a legitimately good movie. This is a legitimately good movie, and it was when it came out.
Yeah, it's funny because like, what if James Cameron had made Transformers?
Yeah, it's true.
Right? Like if you put it in the hands of a visionary who understands technology, this is probably a great movie.
Yeah, like if every single Transformers movie were to have never happened, just on the chance that James Cameron would do one, I would take that.
Of course. If James Cameron had made Transformers in 2009 instead of
dying.
Michael Bay... Yeah, I'm dying too. And I don't usually sweat this much. Had made... instead of making Avatar, if, you know, James Cameron had just made Transformers... I mean, I think we'd be looking at a whole different landscape of film.
God, that'd be so sweet.
Yeah.
No more Avatars and 7 Transformer movies that are amazing.
Yeah, something. I mean,
I'm totally on board.
Or if Michael Bay had made the first one and then Cameron had made the sequel, because everybody knows Cameron makes better sequels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. But
I'm curious to ask Marina, because like, obviously you're not as well versed in these directors as we are, but when we were watching it, I was talking to you about like the lighting and the sound and how he used to be a music video director and all that. Do you have anything to input on this? And like, why do you think that this was a legitimate movie? This is the first time you ever saw it.
I know. And I'm kind of glad that I never saw it because I was able to watch it with you, who's seen it, you said, like 10 to 12 times.
Mm-hmm.
And for it to be 2017 and this was made in 2007, I would never know. I thought, like you said, the lighting, the effects, the animations,
right.
Everything was great. I honestly would not be able to tell you if I did not know it was made in 2007 that it was made 10 years ago at all.
The effects are still pretty wonderful.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's really good.
And to piggyback on that idea, I don't know. Because I think that you make a really great point with the fact that if James Cameron did this, it would be better movies.
I think it would be completely different.
It'd be incredible. It'd be like epics that are like classics.
Right.
But the only other person that could do it justice was Michael Bay at the time.
Right.
You know, like the guy he does have a way with lights and he has a way with these weird relationships between Megan Fox and Shia, and like he just got it for this movie.
Yeah, totally.
He lost it moving down the road. But so to answer your question, Sean, I think we're all kind of in the boat that yeah, if Nolan or Cameron or Spielberg were going to be like, yeah, we'll direct Transformers, of course. But at the time, Michael Bay was the best person to do it.
Yeah.
That seemed fair?
I would agree.
All right.
All right, guys. Moving on to some production people involved. The producers, the biggest billed name is Steven Spielberg. We don't need to say much about Steven Spielberg. He's produced as many credits, significantly more credits, actually, than he's directed, and he's one of the most well-known names in the history of film. The other big ones are Don Murphy. Don Murphy, I knew Don Murphy when I was younger, when I worked at Meltdown Comics.
Really?
Yeah, he was best friends with the owner of the store. I used to give him comics every week. I just was reading about him, and I was like, oh, I know that dude.
I've given that guy so many ideas.
Yeah. but yeah, he was producing Shoot 'Em Up when I met him, which is funny, because it was 2 years before.
I hate that movie so much. I think I need to watch it again, because a lot of people love it.
I don't like it.
I hate it.
Yeah, but From Hell, Leave Extraordinary Gentlemen, Shoot 'Em Up, Double Dragon, Natural Born Killers. You know, he's very involved in genre and comic book sort of related stuff, so his whole career has pretty much been that stuff, plus all the Transformers. Tom DeSanto had a writing credit on X-Men 1, produced X-Men 1 and 2, and then has produced all of the Transformers films. He's attached, as well as Michael Bay, to a Bumblebee spinoff film.
How do you feel about that?
I want nothing to do with it.
Right? Like, it feels completely out of place and way too late.
Yeah, way too late.
And Harris Kayuomi, or whoever you are, 31 points is right.
Yeah.
Bet your ass.
31 points. Yeah.
You bet your sweet ass. You guys that don't know, Ben and I are completely obsessed with the movie Trivia Schmodown. We're team action on there. Go watch our most recent match against Late to the Party. It's awesome.
So, true story. I texted Roxy a couple days ago. Did you see this? I texted her, love you, babe. And then my next text was, actually scratch that. And then my next text was, wait, so sorry, I do love you. I was trying to text Eric about magic cards. And so she screen capped it. And she's like, when Bay cares more about magic cards than he does about you. And Christian screen capped it. And he was like, you know I'm going to use this, right?
This is so good. Yeah, that's brilliant.
And somebody was like, glad to see with Daniel Day-Lewis retiring, somebody's fully applying method to their acting skills. I was like dying laughing.
Oh, man. I love that. Ben and I are just despicable on that show. It's fantastic.
I love it.
Are we done? Are we still talking about production?
Lorenzo Di Bonaventura was the next guy on the
huge
list.
Huge guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bunch of huge producers on this. You know, he had shepherded The Matrix into production when he was at Warner Brothers. He purchased the rights to Harry Potter.
You could just stop there.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Yeah.
Kidding me?
Yeah, he's
the
massive.
Matrix and the Harry Potter series. Yeah,
he also worked on you know, some Wahlberg films like Shooter and Four Brothers.
Oh, I love
that. I interviewed movies. John Singleton on Monday. Did I tell you this?
Why do I know him?
He's Boys in the Hood, Four Brothers.
Oh yeah. Okay, yeah.
Singleton. I covered the premiere for Snowfall and ended up just talking to Singleton for a few minutes. And I loosely pitched my Golden Age of the NBA ad to him. I was like, "Would you do that?" And he was like, "I haven't really thought about that. Thank
I don't
you.
Know. Talk to my agent."
Yeah, exactly.
It's brilliant.
And then last we have Ian Bryce, who produced. He was one of the first producers we ever researched because he produced Speed.
Yeah, and I love the TV movie. I remember talking about that two years ago.
Ewoks Battle for Endor. Yeah, it's like a Star Wars spinoff. But yeah, just a bunch of good movies. Oh, do I feel the air conditioning? Did it just go on?
Just like a little more. You know what's funny? I'm thinking back to when this show started.
Yeah.
And not to say that we don't put a lot of effort into the show now, because we definitely do. I just think it's way more directed in the right. It's focused effort in the right place.
Yeah.
I tried to watch this movie. I tried to find the TV movie Ewoks for Battle for the Endor to talk about Ian Bryce on the Speed episode. I remember doing that and like trying to find it, and then I was like, what the hell are you doing?
It's a deep cut.
It's a deep cut.
It's a deep cut.
I was like, I'm going to make a great point about this film that no one's going to know, and I couldn't find it. and here we are.
All right, guys.
Moving forward to critical and box office. This is the holy shit moment. This movie only cost $150 million to make, which was mind blowing to me.
Yeah.
Because watching it now, you'd think it would cost a half a billion. It was produced by Paramount. It cost $150 million to make, and it was released on July 3rd of 2007. It grossed $319 million domestic with an additional $709 million worldwide for a grand total of over a billion. Or no, oh, Jesus, I just did the math wrong. Sorry. Those two numbers added up to $709 million worldwide, which is, I think, one of the first movies to get close to a billion.
There was a handful. You know.
No. I'm not talking about like Titanic and that, but right. I just mean like there was something about it when it came out that it was like one of the first movies to get close to a billion in a while. I can't remember what it
was. Sure.
I'd have to look it up again. I apologize. Opening weekend, it made $70 million. And then critically, it did really well for itself. It's got a 7.1 on IMDb. It follows our formula of 57% by all critics, 67 by top, and then 85 by the audience, with, of course, three Oscar nods for technical
Can't be a top-tier action film without a couple technical Oscar nominations.
No, you can't. You know what, Marina, you mentioned something about Tyrese in the pre-production about... What was that?
I heard that he paid to get into the movie. I didn't know that was a thing. And is this something that, you know, happens often? He wanted to be, you know, with the Transformers franchise, and he actually paid...
Like, he paid money...
Production, like, to be in it.
Like, crazy. Most actors get paid to be in films.
And a lot of people in this chat are saying, yeah, he was out of place anyways. So,
interesting. I wonder if they were like, it's going to cost $150 if you pay $1 million if you can get in.
Right? Yeah, and it's true, because Tyree, other than left cheek. Yes, other than that, you're just like, what are you doing here?
Maybe the best line in the movie.
Yeah, that's super interesting.
Favorite line.
I actually don't know the answer to that question. Fans, if you guys know, you can throw it in the chat or at AMA Podcast. Do actors pay to be in movies? Big budget blockbusters regularly?
And is that a secret that's not supposed to get out that we know? Or
is that just like a Michael Bay thing?
He might have. I mean, obviously Tyrese is way more famous now
because of the Fast movies. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the time in 07, you know, he had been in the second Fast movie. They hadn't revived the franchise yet. So
apparently he tried to force himself into the Green Lantern movies as well.
Sweet.
Nice try. but so this whole thing, when we were talking about the money behind this, $709 million in 2007 was massive. And it was the beginning of something crazy. And Ben thought of this thing called the franchise formula.
Yeah, I want to introduce this thing called the franchise formula today. And the idea being that Transformers came out in 2007. By the time the sequel for this film went into production and was released in 2009, the world was alerted to the fact that, you know what? If we just slap a number 2 on this, we do this with every single property that has a slight chance, we'll probably have a higher likelihood of success. So what I did is I pulled the top 25 highest grossing films domestically from 2010, the year after the sequel to Transformers, till now, basically this last decade, the last 7 years, and then I pulled the top 25 highest grossing domestic films unadjusted back to 1975, so the 35 years prior, to get a sense of how many of them were franchised, intended to be franchised, and sequels. And what I found was only 8 films in the last 7 years have come out, been in that top 25, and not been a part, either a sequel or an intended franchise sequel or starter.
So to break that down, but to put it in more layman's terms, it's basically that, like, no new ideas make money anymore.
Just shy of 75% of the films in the top 25 highest grossing domestically since 2010, just over 72% of them have been part of franchises or sequels. Right. Like, and when I say part of a franchise, I don't mean like they made the first one, it was really successful, and then they made a sequel, because then it's even worse.
Right.
I'm talking like they made the movie intending to make 2 more, and they started shooting the second and the third before the first came out.
Right. Like Hunger Games.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
So the only 8 films since 2010 that are in that top 25 that aren't are mostly animated. You have Beauty and the Beast, Frozen, The Secret Life of Pets, Jungle Book, Deadpool, Inside Out, American Sniper, and Zootopia. And the Deadpool sequel, I think we can all agree, would never have happened had that movie not been a huge success, because it was a rated R comic book movie.
Totally. And you take out all the animated films, because animated films they've got like that niche audience.
Yep.
You know, they make a shitload of money. You get rid of Jungle Book and Beauty and the Beast because they came from something before.
And they're effectively remakes.
And yeah, exactly. And you've got American Sniper.
Yep.
And that's...
That's it.
That's it.
And Secret Life of Pets, I guess.
And when American Sniper came out, there was like all that stuff going about, like, you know, propaganda, blah, blah, blah. They were wondering if it was going to make any money or not.
Yeah.
And it'd make a shitload.
So the flip side of that statistic, guys, is that if you look at the highest grossing films domestically between 1975 and 2009.
Yeah.
Of the highest grossing 25 films there, more than 50% of those were original concepts. Or
including
released
the top two.
Before an additional franchise installment went into production.
Mm-hmm.
So the concept of doing 3 films all back to back to back was something that we got more and more familiar with in the 2000s. But you look at a lot of these highest grossing films, and it's like Jurassic Park, E.T., Titanic, Avatar, movies that were original, unique concepts, did very, very well.
Yeah.
And then they decided they were going to make sequels later. And it's just it's a different world we live in. And Transformers is really...
Yeah, that was exactly that point that you're like, and then they decided to make sequels later because they made a good movie that made a lot of money and people wanted more.
Yeah.
Not just like, here's a person, we'll put them in a movie for an hour and a half, it'll make X amount of dollars, we're going to try to make X plus 7. You know?
Yeah, because, I mean, look, the most recent example, the glaring examples that we have this summer of just, like, shaking my head are King Arthur and the Mummy, in both cases where it's like...
And this the fifth movie in this franchise, too.
In King Arthur, they were like, we're going to cast this cast, and we're going to make 6 King Arthur movies. We're going to make 6 of them. We want to make a 6-movie universe. And the first movie's so bad that will never happen now. But right. That was the whole idea. We're going to make six movies. The same with this this monster universe with Universal. Like,
it's such a bummer. Like, we were so excited. And it comes out and it's so poorly executed. And now they've got Academy Award winning actors playing all the roles or nominated. You've got Cruz, Bardem, Crow, and
Johnny Depp.
And Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
In like four more movies that I don't give a shit about.
Yeah.
I don't want to see them.
I agree.
Because the universe is something I don't care about. If they were standalone movies on their own, I'd be like, yeah, I'm totally into see, you know, Russell Crowe, Dr. Jekyll, and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
But now that I know it ties back to this universe, I'm like totally bummed out.
Yeah, and now the next level of the franchise effect is that movies are basically just made now for international audiences. They're not even really made for American audiences anymore. Like
The Mummy was basically that.
Yep. It's a cash grab overseas. So anyway, guys, that is the franchise effect study that we wanted to do and talk about on the show today. Thanks for listening to that. Let's move on to the next section of the show, and this is going to be favorite line.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it's good.
I love this. I'm gonna hop in with mine first because I think it is so appropriate for the show. It's from the original comics. The original animated series, and I think it's in the movie as well. The original animated movie.
Which one? What?
The line that I gotta get my voice here. Freedom is the right of all sentient beings.
Oh, it's not. It might be from the cartoon, but it's not from the animated movie.
Okay, so it's in the cartoon, then.
But Peter Cullen's just a stud. Yeah. Everything that guy says is great.
But the whole thing, you know, they're a young species. They have much to learn, but there's goodness in them. That whole monologue he gives, I love.
Yeah,
that one line is excellent.
Yeah, if you guys aren't aware of it, Peter Cullen came back and reprised his role. He's the actual voice of Optimus Prime in the cartoon, in the animated movie. Whereas the voice of Megatron, his voice had aged. They didn't want to get him back.
And, like, in the cartoon, wasn't he kind of like Weasley sounding?
Yeah.
He kind of talks like this, Prime.
Yeah.
And whereas it's like Hugo Weaving.
It's
like awesome. I love Hugo.
Yeah, me too. Do you know that he's really, really, really good in Hacksaw Ridge? Do you know that he's in it?
Yeah, I watched Hacksaw.
Oh, you watched it? Okay. I didn't realize that.
Who is he in there?
He's the dad. He plays his...
Oh, yeah, his dad. Yeah, he's excellent. He's really good.
Yeah.
Really sad. Yeah.
But excellent. All right, guys. So my favorite line is going to be when Prime and Megatron are fighting at the end, and it's because it is from the animated
film. Did you
like
Hacksaw Ridge? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I liked it.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was good. I mean, that joke that people like to make about Simple Jack and war is like a terrible joke, but like when you're watching it, you're like, I understand why people make that joke, but like, that's a stupid thing to say.
That's based off of a real person that's a hero.
That movie's great.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Mel Gibson makes good movies, even though he's insane.
Yes.
So, by the way, speaking of Mel Gibson and being insane, did you see the trailer for Daddy's Home 2?
Is he in it?
Yeah, he's... So you're going to love this.
Oh, I'm so excited.
So
already.
Now, in the Daddy's Home universe, Wahlberg and Ferrell are, like, good buddies, even though I kind of thought that first movie sort of sucked. It was fine.
I don't know.
It was fine.
Okay.
But they're, like, good buddies now. Now they, like, co-parent the kids or whatever. So first, they go to the airport, and Ferrell's like, what are we waiting for? And Wahlberg's like, you got to hide, man. My dad's showing up.
Yes!
And it's like, and his dad is Mel Gibson, and he's like, it's okay. My dad's showing up, too. And he looks over, and it's Lithgow coming down an escalator. It just looks amazing.
I'm so excited. Lithgow is Ferrell's dad, and Gibson is Wahlberg's dad.
Yeah.
Sign me up. We're doing it on the show.
It's like a meet the parents situation. I also love that somebody in the Facebook group the other day was asking about the other guys' favorite lines and will we do it on the show. I was guaranteed it's happening.
Easy. Yeah.
Guaranteed.
God damn it, let me finish.
Yeah.
What's your favorite line?
My favorite line is when Prime and Megatron get into that fight and he looks at him and he's like, Megatron, at the end of today, one shall stand and one shall fall.
Rangers fan literally typed that right as you were
saying. Yeah, well, it's because it's from the animated movie.
So good.
In the animated movie, what happens is the Decepticons fly in on basically like a stolen ship to get to the Autobot city or whatever, and they like massacre the city, and they're like kicking their ass, and Prime shows up all of a sudden, and he looks around, and he's like, Megatron must be stopped. And then it goes, da, 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 you got the touch. And that's
Are you serious?
You didn't know that?
No.
That's where that song's from. That song's originally from Transformers.
You got the power.
Yeah.
No way.
Stan Bush wrote the song for Transformers the Animated Movie. And that's the song that plays as Prime rolls through and transforms and flips and does this like sweet backflip with his gun and takes a bunch of Decepticons.
I would have died laughing. Okay, so for those of you who don't understand what's happening right now, Boogie Nights is Ben and I's favorite movie of all time. Yeah. And Scotty J...
Yeah.
Anyway, Wahlberg and Riley sing that song in there. It's fantastic.
It's really good. Yeah. That's what it's from.
Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a big fan.
If anything, I'm so happy we did this now.
Yeah.
So I know that.
So, anyway, guys, that's my favorite line. Marina, did you have a favorite line?
I did. I had a few. I'm big for comedy, and I think in an action movie that's really important. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the awe moment kind of breaks it up.
Right.
Amongst all the fighting and kind of brings you back to that place. When Anthony Anderson goes, Grandma's rug, she ain't like no one on the rug, especially the police. Yeah. Like, that was hilarious.
It was,
and
like, yeah, it was done. They did
it was
the
inserted,
well,
like,
in there.
Perfectly well yeah. in the movie. And then I liked when Optimus Prime, I'm trying to do my best voice, he was like, the parents are very irritating. Can I take them out?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're just, like, seeing these parents frantically try to figure out what's wrong with their son, and he's just not having any of it.
Yeah, I also love
the animal leaked lubricants on my foot.
Yeah,
yeah, it's great.
Rust. And we didn't even talk about how good Kevin Dunn is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Kevin Dunn's seriously.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Earthquake! Earthquake!
How'd you get all the way over there?
Aftershock! Aftershock! He hops in the bathtub. Brilliant.
Yeah. When Shia's like, no, you sleep well, handsome man. God, I love you. It's good. The comedy's good.
Yeah, it's very good.
Kevin Dunn's a star. The one thing we didn't also talk about just on the subject of music in this movie is I had the soundtrack, and it's a really good soundtrack, but I love the two songs that Bumblebee plays when he's first with Megan Fox. Who's gonna drive you home?
Oh, yeah,
like that.
Great, yeah.
Right? And then it's like, baby, come back. It's like, it's just
all
the best.
All those songs
the,
are
yeah,
great.
The
yeah.
use is perfect. I remember seeing that in theaters and being like, this is really clever.
This has been said a couple times. This is a million times better than Armageddon. when that kid's yelling, running around, taking video
yeah,
cameras.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny.
So we were talking earlier before the show about your favorite line was more of like your fist pump moment, right?
Yeah, well, she was just saying something kind of like an awe moment, which, yeah, right? You were saying it's like sort of a, like, not like an explosion of awesome, but almost like a...
Yeah, like, explain this to us a little bit.
It's like an explosion of emotion,
right,
if
yeah.
you will. You
okay.
know? It's this, it could be 2 seconds, it could be a monologue, whatever it is, but it's this moment where one of the characters, in this case, Michaela, Megan Fox, just says this to, you know, I don't regret getting in that car. And you're just like...
explosion of emotion.
Yeah, yeah you, right, like, yeah. And it's an action movie. The whole time you want to be like focused. Yeah, yeah. Go this side. But you're just like,
right.
I get it.
And we always talk about those moments that ground you in reality. And there are those moments in all movies. And I'll use this as an example. And correct me if I'm wrong here, because I'm trying to see if I figure this out. So in Wonder Woman, my favorite line and my fist pump moment were basically the same thing. But if we were to have had this, No Man's Land would have been my fist pump.
Right.
That moment when she comes up, she's like, this is what I can do. She goes up, you're like, fuck yeah. Like,
right.
this is going to happen.
Yeah.
But then at the end, my favorite line, when he's like, I wish we had more time, I cried.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah.
I cried. That was my explosion of emotion, literally.
Right.
So, yeah, I think all these movies do have that. And it is different from the fist pump, because you don't want to take away from fist pump.
Yeah, right.
It's too important.
Yeah, I mean, John Wick, when they kill his dog, that's like an awe moment.
Yeah, it's not a fist pump.
Yeah, whereas like the fight in the house is like a clear fist pump moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like this. I think we can add this. What did you call it? The
explosion of emotion.
Explosion
of emotion?
I just think it's necessary in an action movie. You need that moment, like you said, to ground you back to reality, because you can get caught up, you know,
right.
with everything that's going on, and before you know it, the 2 hours is over, and you're just kind of like on this action high. And
right.
It kind of brings you back, and...
Yeah.
Even if it's little, you know?
I completely agree, because we've said this since day one, that the best parts of action movies are not the action. It's what happens in between the movie that keeps it going forward that makes the action feel grounded.
Yeah, it's the common misconception about our love of the genre. That's why we end up covering action dramas so often.
And Joel Hammett already says explosion of emotion would be a sweet segment going forward.
Explosion of emotion.
There you go.
Noted.
You did all right. You did all right today.
Yeah, I think there's only one, one section.
Hold on,
left.
What about Cage versus Cruz?
Oh, did you leave it in here intentionally?
Starscream? You failed me again.
You failed me again.
Starscream, you failed me again. Damn it.
What if, like, this movie had been made, like, 5-6 years prior, and Nick Cage had the kind of Hollywood star cred where he was just like...
He was Optimus Prime?
Where they were like, if we put Nick Cage in this movie, it'll be successful.
Yeah.
Like Ghost Rider. And he had, like, managed to get himself in as, like, a major role.
Dude, I would have loved it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, Cage versus Cruz didn't really fit here. So,
Where's the cube? Where's the cube? Criminals are hot.
Oh,
Jesus.
No.
Get out of here. All right. So which of the three action movie categories does it fit into? We got Totally Ridiculous. That's like Fall Off the Face of Absurdity. Those are movies like Face Off, Demolition Man. Movies that are, they're still enjoyable, but like
they're
you don't
really
believe
silly.
Anything that
yeah,
happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on the other end of that, we got Totally Legitimate. Those are movies like Die Hard, Gladiator,
Lone
The
Survivor.
Fugitive, Lone Survivor. Those are like, they're strong dramas that have action in
the
them.
The Departed.
Yeah, they're very, very good films. They don't really fall apart at all. They could be Academy Award winning movies,
right?
And then the middle category,
which is ridiculously legitimate, which is tends to be like the favorite category of the show. It's movies like The Predator and Point Break. They're silly, but they're grounded with like, at least one really, really strong performance or really like strong driving element.
Yeah,
that kind of keep. But like you do laugh unintentionally here and there. For me, this movie is totally ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you were going to put it in the middle because you like Shia so much.
I think he's great, and I think Shia, like, kills it. But yeah, even the best moments in this movie are guilty pleasures. Even, like, the relationship moments, they're like watching The OC in high school, which I make reference to a lot because I love that show so much.
Love that show.
But, like, the best moments in this, the single best moments in this movie are, like, guilty pleasure. Like, I can't tell you why I love this so much. I just happen to love it. And the worst moments are unwatchable. So, for me, it's totally ridiculous.
Do you have an opinion here, Marina?
I mean, I don't... I would say kind of in the middle, you know?
So you think the middle category?
Yeah.
Ridiculously legitimate?
Yeah.
Back it up, girl. Why?
Because, like you said, what you're saying was like Point Break.
Yeah.
That's what you were comparing it to? I don't know. I think it has this performance. I think, like we were talking when we were watching it, the last scene is just like dynamite.
Yeah.
You know, right on the streets of LA. It's just, it's killer. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the moment for me that makes it legitimate.
Yeah, because...
And then the comedic, you know, relief throughout it kind of makes it this... Because, like, I found myself laughing and giggling at some of the points, but I like in an action movie, and some people may not.
Right.
Because they think it takes
and
away.
And you weren't laughing because it was stupid. You were laughing because it was actually executed comedy right.
Perfect like timing. Meant to do it. Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's interesting, because that... Without that end scene, this movie would suck.
Right.
Because, yeah, like, they really don't give you enough action throughout. So... But they give you all the comedy in the relationship throughout. I totally understand what you're saying, that it's yeah, totally ridiculous, because I absolutely feel that way. But I think I have to go ridiculous legitimate as well, because I think I take this movie just a little more seriously than every other one of his movies he's ever done in this franchise are completely ridiculous. Totally ridiculous. They wouldn't even be on the show ridiculous.
Yeah, right.
But I think Shia is so good in this, and their relationship is so believable. The parents are good. I think it's ridiculous legitimate.
Fair enough.
On the lower end.
Fair enough.
Fair enough.
One shell.
You guys
rise.
Are scary good at that voice.
Wait till you see our... Damn him. Damn that man.
Yeah,
we should just do the edge
you'll
again.
You'll just do that episode again. We can just do it again.
We should do it right now.
Yeah. All right, guys. That's going to wrap it up for the categories. There's only one last thing on the show. We teased it already, and that's going to be called The Pitch.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. The Pitch. We're pitching a movie. So, guys, we revealed our schedule for the next 6 weeks on the show on the Facebook page. If you go to that Facebook fan page for Action Movie Anatomy, you can see our next 6 weeks. Next week, we are doing Rise of the Planet of the Apes. This is the James Franco film from 2011, directed by Rupert Wyatt, and this was a surprise
so
hit. It's really good. It's more dramatic than it is action-packed, but it does have quite a bit of action in the second half of it.
It has quite a bit of action, in the second half and throughout, and it's a different type of action. It's almost more of like a spy type of action.
And this movie is fucking sweet.
I just watched it.
I can't wait to talk about it on the show. This movie was really good. Legitimately
yeah, it's a,
really
it's a
good.
Really brilliant movie, and with how great the third one's supposed to be, I think it would be an injustice to the franchise to not cover the first film and figure out where Caesar came from.
Yeah, we would honestly like to do the whole trilogy because the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes
is so
great,
good.
But
yeah,
we probably, with the schedule we have right now, wouldn't be able to get to it till the end of the summer, which maybe we'll do, or maybe we'll save it for, you know, when one of them comes out on video or
all
something.
Right, sorry, I gotta say this real quick. Eric Reitzema just said about the Josh Duhamel thing, riding back through the city, sliding 40
yeah,
feet underneath the robot and shooting a grenade into him. Damn you, Eric.
This movie's
totally ridiculous.
Yeah
No, that was it. I just forgot about that. And there's moments throughout that are just ridiculous.
That happens. You're like, your skin would be torn off your body.
That Transformer would have just stepped on you.
And you slid 40 feet.
And you still shot him. All right. Fine. You convinced me. I moved. So, Marina, you're on your own on this. We're both totally ridiculous. But that's fair. I've been swayed before.
Yeah.
Well done, Eric.
Anyway, guys, that's going to be the show next week. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Be sure to follow along with each and every one of us. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
You guys can find me at Andrew Guy on Twitter and Instagram. And you can find the podcast at AMA Podcast or the fan page on Facebook, Action Movie Anatomy fan page.
And you can find our Sector 7 liaison on Twitter and Instagram. Where at?
Marina_Verano.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching, guys. We'll see you same time, same place next week.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.